You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week, this show will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and those you care about. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference together. Now, before we get to our guest, please know that I am grateful to all of you that take your precious time to listen to and in some cases, watch this show, and especially those that send in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions, because please remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten your copy, which is free, of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, please go to our website at answers.network and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your family. Now, a quote. The quote for today, unfortunately, is not from the journal, but it is one of my favorites. Watch your thoughts, for they become words. Watch your words, for they become actions. Watch your actions, for they become habits. And watch your habits, for they become character. Watch your character, for it becomes your destiny. And for many of you that know that I try to give you a little bit of a hint of what our topic's going to be by the quote, our topic today is conquer your karmic relations. Heal spiritual trauma to open your heart and restore your soul. Our guest, Tracy Dunsblazer, is a Los Angeles-based spiritual empath, shaman, and an 8-time national award-winning author. As a multi-sensitive, Tracy's blend of intuitive information combined with different modalities has provided the opportunity for many to achieve deep healing and create the success and peace they seek in their lives. Now, her compassionate, humorous, down-to-earth style empowers her clients, readers, and listeners to address difficult topics with courage and clarity. Because of this, Tracy is consistently called upon by the media for expert commentary on spirituality and relationship dynamics. In 2015, Tracy founded Go Tracy Publishing LLC, a nationally awarded hybrid publisher that specializes in spirit healing narrative nonfiction and tools for self-discovery. Now, these bestsellers often offer light in a dark place, and they can be a game changer for many of us. I highly suggest that you check them out. So, Tracy, welcome to Answers Network.
Hello. Thank you so much. It's really terrific to be here.
Well, it is my pleasure. And, you know, as we talked about, the show goes for about 50 minutes, and I feel like we could go for about 3 hours with all the things that I want to talk about. So I want to start with the word karma. Now, you have it in the title of your new book, but we hear the word karma thrown around quite often. And unfortunately, it's usually in a negative context. So what's your definition of karma?
Karma is not punishment and reward. Karma, as you hinted, and I loved your quote, because that personifies karma. Karma creates patterns. That those patterns, wherever, if they come from spiritual imprints or past lives, whatever your perspective of life allows you to understand and perceive your outer world with, karma is all the actions taken and the response to those actions in patterns moving forward. So that's what karma is our spiritual patterns that guide us as we incarnate.
So what led you to this path of spirituality?
I was born into it. I was certainly born into, I was a psychic child. I definitely dealt with an awareness of all the spiritual levels, all the different dimensions of spirituality that were available to me. A lot of them were deeply negative. I had a lot of spiritual trauma that I brought into this lifetime with. So I didn't sleep much at night. I grieved for the first half of my life about everything. I'm an empath. And that allowed me to actually get to some of the spiritual imprints that I carried that I needed to process through. It is who I am. And then it wasn't until, you know, I think I'd been in LA just a few years when somebody I worked with found out that I was psychic and that I did readings. And he said, you know, why don't you do them at this event that we have? And they sat me down and literally people lined up out the door. And the unique thing was that they didn't sit down to, well, they sat down thinking they were going to hear their future. But what happened was these amazing spiritual and emotional releasements of me acknowledging something in them that even they weren't able to recognize until they had it, you know, shown to them through me, meaning they recognized a bit of themselves, like on my face,
right,
in a sense. And that just, that made me see that who I am had value in our world. And then the job that I had went away and I was like, you know, I'm going to do this. I would have never in a million years thought that I would be working as a spiritualist. Never.
Mm-hmm. And I know lots of people that I think that are incredibly empathic or they're incredibly sensitive, but how did you realize that you were an empath? And once you realized it, is it something that you were able to hone or to you know, it's like a muscle that you can improve.
Yes. So empathy, I think, is the first, well, actually channeling or clairsentience, which is our ability to just know things energetically without any real evidence of them. I always knew things long before I even had the ability to express them. And it wasn't until my father was ill, but my family didn't tell the children. I was the youngest of three. And when my father took ill and they never told us, but I knew. And then because I knew, I was able to, I don't know, I remember this moment when I thought, Dad's going to die. And at that point, they hadn't told us that he was even sick. And maybe it was a matter of 6 months or a year. I don't remember the timing because I was around 11 at the time. He died. Mm-hmm. And so that showed me this level, this, all this stuff that I felt like I knew it was truthful. And I just had to wait till the time where it could be received in the world, or I could be acknowledged in the world as having, like, when you're a child and you know things, adults tell you to be quiet. That's just what we do.
Yes.
You know, so it was, I think for me, the intersection of being old enough to at least be acknowledged or at least have a voice loud enough to say, no, this is what I see to be true. And then have people receive it and acknowledge it in some way. Those two things created a space for me to do what I do. And
I would say, how did your parents deal with it? 'Cause you brought up a great point. I think that there are so many things that you know, that children have when they're born, and it gets stifled or it gets, you know, pushed aside. And anyway, you know, I think that they need to use their imagination. They need to be free to do so many of these things. And yet we seem to have, especially a school system that is, you know, no, don't go there, sit down and learn how to do this, and this.
Yes.
How did your parents deal with it? And how did teachers deal with it?
You know, it's interesting. When I look back, I was very, in school, I was in every activity. I was the president or vice president of something. And so I was always put in this position of leadership and authority. So that's what the teachers saw. They didn't see psychic me. That was the way that I was able to, I guess, connect that part of me in a position of leadership, in terms of caring about people and being passionate about people and wanting causes or projects to happen. It gave me a place to focus it. And as far as my family was concerned, you know, I think I was just discussing this with somebody yesterday is, you know, my father, he was a disc jockey actually, from the 50s, 60s, and he worked in radio, and our life revolved around him. He did not want my mother to work. He had very conservative views, which honestly, I didn't know him well as a child. He was also very intuitive, but I think if he had stayed around longer and I'd lived more years with him, I might've been in great conflict with some of his views opposed to some of the views that I internally knew. And my mother, once he died, that really shifted our family in such a way that there wasn't a lot of communication. There was, I could empathize with my mother and where she was at, but she always responded to me as an equal, not as a parent. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that combination of things put me in a position to feel free to be who I am and not have it confronted with self-doubt by somebody, you know, giving me their opinion of life. So I'm grateful for that. I mean, in my younger years, I was very deeply hurt and resentful of that because it was painful. Sure. Because they weren't able to do or be what I assumed I needed. And I think that sometimes, of course, as children, we don't really know what we need until we can draw back and have some perspective about who we are and the environment that allowed us to fully flourish in who we are.
And you mentioned with the teachers how they somehow recognized the fact that that you had some leadership qualities, which I think is great. And I'm one that I feel that I had some incredible teachers that helped me through an incredible amount of things. So I'm so incredibly grateful yes. about that. But I'm wondering that. Do you think one of the things that they saw is confidence? Do you feel that this helped your confidence in the sense of you feeling like you knew things that maybe other people didn't, and that Absolutely. Provided some confidence for you? And share a little bit about what you believe confidence really is and what it isn't, because I think there's also sort of a fake confidence that's out there.
Right. Confidence is about habit. Confidence is not about being right. Confidence is about when you realize you're wrong, saying, "Oh, I was wrong. Now that's not going to work, but let's try this." Mm-hmm. It's the confidence to step out with an opinion or a thought or a focus and do it. You know, confidence is the habit of doing. So if you are in the habit of feeling bad, diminishing yourself in front of others, allowing others to diminish you, that appears to us as a low self-esteem or a lack of confidence, but no, you actually have a confidence in diminishing yourself or viewing yourself as less than, meaning you have a pattern in place that points you in this particular direction. And whatever direction we get pointed in, again, is our karma. And you're absolutely right. I came in, I laugh. I don't know that I would have liked to have dealt with me as a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old. You know, and luckily I had very strong values, and I really was able to see people from where they were, good, bad, or indifferent. So mm-hmm. if someone did not have good intentions, I saw it, and I felt confident to handle that or move away from it. So I was grateful for that. But because I had that well-rounded inner knowledge, I think that kept me safe in places where adults would normally keep a child safe, right? Normally we assume that information comes from the adults in our life, but for me, it did not.
Now, do you think that maybe you were put into a situation that you grew up too fast?
No, not at all. I don't know how to explain it other than I came in fully developed in knowledge. The struggle for me was learning to express that, to figure out the words. When I finally figured out the words, like oftentimes I would channel information that just, and it sounded like an adult was speaking. And then that wasn't received well because people see that as arrogance, or the adults are, you know, there's a whole dynamic that comes with that. There's a whole, I mean, I was very strong-willed, and that is not looked at. I mean, if I had been into things that were disruptive to me and others, you know, I could have easily been in jail. you know what I mean? Like, instead I pointed that will in the places where I was allowed to take leadership. And that, I think that element was the part that saved me. And when I graduated high school, I was the student body president and the Albuquerque City Council president. I was president and vice president of a lot of things, again, because that was the thing that saved me. I wasn't the best student because my attention span was like a flea. Like, I mean, I feel bad saying that about a flea, but I mean, I had a very short attention span because I was always in other worlds. So when I graduated high school, I ended up bypassing college and I ended up moving to New York City.
Wow.
And New York City was the best place for me because people at any age, people saw who I was and they were able to groom me in a way that matches how I saw myself. You know, they challenged me directly rather than making assumptions about what I should be or how things should be going. They were like, look, you're doing this and you need to stop that. Or, you know, you're doing this and it would be better if it was focused this way. And then I was like, oh, okay, great. You know, and that wasn't the environment that I grew up in.
Okay. So, but it sounds like you're describing this environment as they weren't beating around the bush. They were getting right to it.
Exactly. They were telling the truth as they saw it. And okay. In my family, we didn't do that. In fact, if there was communication, I can't say that there just wasn't much communication. So there wasn't much truth being told. There was a lot of stuff being felt, but no one felt comfortable to express it. And then I'm an empath, so I have to express everything. I cried a lot. Nobody knew what to do with that. You know, but in New York, they just deal like, hey, why are you crying? What's going on? You know? Oh, okay. Well, I'm just feeling sad. Why are you sad? What? And then, you know, okay. Oh, well, if you put it that way, let me figure it out. And so that took all of that raw kinetic energy that I had and allowed me to put it in some places that paved skills for me.
Yeah. What advice would you give someone who feels that that they're highly sensitive and feel that they're very empathic, but they've not honed it? They've just had people tell them, but they just have never really felt like, you know, that either people take it seriously or you know, or that they should hone it or something. You know, what advice would you give for somebody who's dealing with this and doesn't really know what to do with it?
So when you first really indulge in your empathy, it's very easy to feel victimized. And it's very easy to feel victimized by the people in your life who do not understand why you feel so much. Mm-hmm. So the first thing one must do is that sense of self-pity is making them pay attention to what's going on in their heart, what they're feeling, and that they have to value that first. Once you value what you feel, once you recognize what you feel, then you can begin to understand how you might feel the weight of the entire room or the city or the country, right? There's a lot of different mm-hmm. circles of empathy that one can feel, and you've got to take it seriously first. And then you have to stop being mad about having to educate others about where you're at. You know, you can't be mad at them. You just have to, either participate or not. You know, you right. have to set boundaries.
Yeah. Well, I've got a story for you, and I'm curious if this has happened to you. But I was in a meeting, and it was a group of Hollywood producers. And we were talking about a particular show that we were putting together. And I all of a sudden turned to one of the producers and I answered a question. Mm-hmm. And everybody froze. And he said, I didn't ask that verbally, but I just thought that question, but I hadn't asked it yet. And I really felt kind of uncomfortable because I really thought that I was answering a question that I heard.
Yes.
It was never verbalized. So of the five people or so sitting in this room, they're all looking at me like, you're kind of weird.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
I would imagine now you've honed things to where you would know the difference, but as you were coming up with these abilities, did you run into situations like that, and how did you deal with it?
It's very interesting. So there's a kind of a stereotypical thing that psychics oftentimes are known for. When people deal with a psychic, they're like, oh, read my palm, or tell me about me, and a lot of psychics want to do that. They're like, hey, I want to tell you this message coming through for you. And the truth is, we all have this ability to be telepathic, which is what that was. Mm-hmm. That telepathy is the beginning of being clairaudient, where you literally hear, you know how it wasn't like a voice, a physical voice, but you heard the question so clearly, it was so real to you that you responded to it.
Right.
That's what we call clairaudience. And people think that it's like you actually hear things or you hear voices, but you don't. It's literally that level of clarity in telepathy. And I think that the only thing to do with that is be accountable for what comes out of your mouth. That's like, at the end of the day, you can hear anything, but you have to think ahead that when I say this out loud, can I stand beside it? Right? Because what happens is that, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, you didn't say that, or you didn't ask that. Well, oh, and it's the response would be, well, you wanted to know that question, right? Great. Then we just moved a little quicker than we thought.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it's the willingness to be accountable for every word that you say, regardless of what inspired it. You've got to be accountable for what you bring into this physical world. Mm-hmm. And have that forethought, if you will.
So I want to give some time to touch on some other things that you touch on in the book. And one of them is bad habits. And I've spoken about this on the show with others. And we've tried to go into different ways in which we can replace bad habits. If there's anybody out there that's saying that they don't have any, you're either lying to us or lying to yourself. So how can we replace bad habits with helpful ones that stick?
For me, my whole world is about the why of things. Why are you doing this? So any habit that we have in place, we are getting a payoff for. There is something about it. As long, for every minute that we have it, there's something we're getting from it. And the first thing is to admit to ourselves what we get from it. You know, maybe we're getting negative attention. Maybe we are feeling powerful. Maybe we are feeling confident. Maybe we are feeling self-pity and get to be victimized and therefore not be accountable, right? But whatever we are doing, there's a pattern that's happening that is suiting us in some way. And so when we understand what we're getting from it, we can reevaluate whether or not we still want that, or if we can get that thing another way. And if, in fact, we can get that thing another way, then we are free to put a new pattern in place. When it comes to habits, grief is the aspect, the initiative aspect of ourself that helps our brain to release old habits in the neurons in our brain, like neural circuitry that tells you to do this thing over and over. Grief erases that. And oftentimes we have habits in place with something that has hurt us or that we feel bad about or disempowered by, that we actually need to grieve it and recognize there has been a change that we did not get on board with, or that there is a change coming that we must surrender to. When you do that work, Mm-hmm. You can make any change you want, and it's easy.
Okay. Can you walk us through one? So obviously without using any names, but, you know, with a client that you've had that brought in a particular bad habit and mm-hmm. how they were able to work through it and maybe what it was replaced with when we were all done.
Yes, I have a great story. So there was a woman who smoked for 20 years and literally just right around her 20-year anniversary, she came to see me. We literally did one session and she didn't smoke again after that. And that's not that. So she came to me and where we started with was what with that first day that you picked up a cigarette, what happened on that day? And mm-hmm. she went, oh, I was raped. Oh. I was raped in this situation. She was young and she was violated. It was a obviously awful situation. Mm-hmm. And what we did is we took her back into that situation where she visualized herself pulling herself out of that situation and not taking her power back from that situation and that person. And the minute she did that, it freed her from continuing the personal attack, the self-sabotage that she took over from that person after they did that to her. A lot of
wow.
people, I know it's deep. And mm-hmm. then this is a, it just rolls off my tongue like butter because I'm used to dealing with these very intense situations, but anything that we endure, oftentimes, if we have a traumatic situation that happens, we cover it up with a layer and another layer and another layer and another layer. And we have to work our way through those layers. But if we are willing to go to the origin of the event that created a pattern for us, it makes it easy to shift the pattern. And 20 years later, she had grieved. She had been to therapy. She'd done all kinds of work, but was still living with that one thing that was left over, which was smoking. Smoking to breathe, smoking to relieve anxiety, smoking to feel empowered, you know, smoking to focus and not grieve, right? Smoking is a very powerful tool that we use for all of those things I just mentioned. And it's fine for a week or so, but it's not fine for 20 years. So...
I got it. Wow. So our guest is Tracy Dunsblazer. We are talking about conquering your karmic relationships. We're going to take a break. Speaking of relationships, when we come back, I'm going to ask Tracy how we can use some of this information that we can gain to better our relationships. So stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers Network. We are talking with Tracy Dunsblazer, and we are talking about karma. And so when we went to break, I mentioned a little bit about relationships. So Tracy, can you share how a person's relationship to karma plays directly into their romantic relationships and how they can improve everything from the quality of their dates they're going on to the love and relationships they already have in their lives.
Mm-hmm. So we see karma in relationships in the way in which we are able to attach to somebody or to not attach to somebody mentally or emotionally, like the way in which we connect. Mm-hmm. So an empathic person is instantly able to attach. They are emotionally open and connected. And oftentimes when two people come together in a complete meeting of a particular vibration, like emotions or trauma, that connection is intense. And that's a soulmate. That's what we call a soulmate, somebody whom with we have this instant interaction with and connection with that doesn't allow for us to, in time and over time, create an honest relationship with them, because we come together and we feel like we already know them. We have a kinship of trauma, mm-hmm. right? And then what happens in that relationship is that as you work, you are forced to work through your trauma. You're working through your relationship to your trauma, to what happened to you or to your feelings about it, with a mirror. Once you've done that work, there is often no need for that relationship any further. And that's what we call a soulmate. Somebody that we come in and just have to do the thing with. And then it, you know, once we get the information that their energy opens up in us, we have less of a need for the relationship, or the relationship becomes conflicted and we have to work through that conflict in order to stay in the relationship. Another way that we see that is control. You know, people come together, you know, there are all kinds of sexual fetishes that center around, you know, sadomasochism and bondage and discipline. It centers around the idea of building trust with another person in regards to making decision of who's in control and who is submissive in the relationship. And so that's the honest version of that kind of relationship. But most people come together with some sort of power and control connection where one person is submissive and the other person is dominant. And then they play out, they use whatever that pattern is to get to know one another. And then the point in which either partner wants to change their role in the relationship, again, that's where conflict comes in. And oftentimes in those deeply, deeply patterned, you know, striations of the relationship, they're not able necessarily to work through them, or the relationship doesn't have enough value to them to work through them. So that's karma in a relationship. I think in general, we all, especially in our younger years, when we are, it is our hormonal system, our endocrine system in the body that gives us the chemicals that we need in order to relate to other people. Right? We have a biological mm-hmm. relationship, and then that opens up what we are willing to have on an emotional, spiritual, and intellectual connection with people. And so in that period of time, people, your hormones open up certain aspects, certain spiritual imprints or patterns that you have incarnated with, like the beliefs you might have, all men are X or all women will do X. You know, whatever belief you have, mm-hmm. those come up, and we choose partners that allow us to see what that is, evaluate it, keep it, or discard it.
Well, and there's been a lot of information out now in regards to the ways in which people are being manipulated to believe one thing or another, and we have technology now that's trying to utilize that to literally take control of the brain. Now, during this time where there is so much intentional and very selfish divisiveness, share how we can look at our lives through a different lens, so that we can and accept others for who they are and find tolerance for those that we disagree with. Because right now, we don't have that. In fact, it's just the opposite. They're saying, don't have tolerance for anybody that disagrees with you. How can we change that internally and not be so influenced by these outside influencers?
Here's the thing. There comes a time in every person's spiritual journey, and their spiritual journey doesn't mean just this lifetime. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what people say and do outside of you. You control yourself. You get to choose what is right for you and what is not right for you. The government doesn't do it. Your parents don't do it. Your friends don't do it. The public at large does not do it. Eventually, that is the universal truth, and people are eventually going to know that. That is the universal truth. Now, if that's not your truth, you're going to have to test each one of those things. And that's what we're seeing right now, is people are testing the theory that the government controls everything. They're controlling the vaccinations. They're controlling this. They're testing those beliefs because they are unwilling to be accountable for their own choices. And I'm saying it from the universal truth place. I don't believe for a second that the people who really believe those things, they have not yet given themselves permission to be empowered, regardless of somebody else's power. And that's the bottom line, is that at the end of the day, we come in alone and we die alone. You know, we have to be accountable for who we choose to be, the choices we make, the words we speak, the ideas that we put out there, and how they impact others. So,
well, and I think, I mean, you and I are on the same page on this. Unfortunately, there are millions of people out there that are not seeing it that way.
Right.
What can we do to, I understand what you're saying, but you know, as far as we need to empower more people to look inward, what right now, if you could tell people or use your magic wand or something to where it can be, how can we make this, how can we get people to do this, to look more inside and to not be as manipulated? And unfortunately, you know, we're seeing that it's working, you know, that.
Here's the thing. Don't stop being mad about it. This is something I have this conversation with my sister all the time. I'm like, look, I know this looks ugly, but this is the most progress we have made in 100 years. What we are seeing right now, this level of honesty, or complete delusional view, is really powerful, because these are the thoughts, beliefs, and ideals that people have been avoiding or pretending publicly that they don't believe, while in secret they do. So everything that was secret has come out into the open. When you have a grounded view of your world, you recognize your power in it and your power to make choices that are going to affect what you do, in spite of the government and other elements of our life. For those who are learning that, don't be mad at them for it. Stop engaging with them in it. Stop fighting them on it. Meaning, and what I mean by that doesn't mean, you know, let the people who are fighting, gun control. It's not to say politically we don't make the choices that we still make, but emotionally you have to stop participating in the minutiae that gives power and energy to what they're doing or not.
Well, no, I agree with that. And I've been trying to promote, and it's interesting because when I have somebody who is pushing very hard based on one particular thought, that they're trying to push, is that, you know, I will just ask them to be open-minded and
right.
recognize that the people that are that have the other view of this particular topic are being sent a different narrative information-wise. And so you're never going to be able to sit down and have a conversation about this if both sides are being told, just demonize the other side and don't listen to them.
Right.
So I'm trying to tell them, just listen, understand they're being sent information, right or wrong.
Right.
But it's sent in a fashion that is believable to them, and you're being sent something differently. Maybe if you sit down and talk and realize that you're both being sent something that might be a little too far out. So
I think I know what you're asking me. I'm hoping that this anecdote will. So back when Obama was running for president for the first time, I was working as a psychic in this place on weekends, and the mailman came in. And he was, you know, if you don't know, I'm a liberal. People didn't figure that out. But the mailman came in, and he was very far right. He was very anti-Obama. He thought the government was going to take over. And, you know, I don't know what made him want to bring that to me. But I was like, okay, well, so tell me more about it. And he kept he kept shouting these platitudes, and I'm like, you keep raising your voice as if I can't hear you. Do you think I can't hear you? Because I can hear you. You know, I kept every time he brought something to me, I brought it right back to not politics, but his behavior. And finally, I said, you know, you keep speaking over me, yet you ask me a question. So what is it you really want here? What do you want right now in this moment? Are you being the person that you want to be in your life? By asking me a question and then refusing my answer? Is that the person that you want to be? And his face turned red, and the wall just fell, and he's like, no. I said, okay, so would it be okay if I answered your question? And he said, yes. And I answered his question. And then all of a sudden it all came back, and he's like, oh, you got me. You got me. He was mad that I actually broke through that repertoire that he had. And for days after that, he couldn't speak to me. For almost 6 months to a year, when I would run into him, he would literally dodge me from that conversation. But I think that's the only thing that we can do, is appeal to the person that you're dealing with. That you're dealing with, the people have the beliefs they do because of the life they have. And if we have a deeper understanding and we're willing to say, okay, let's set politics aside. Who are you?
Right.
And what is this thing that you want? And why do you as a person need it? How is it going to help you in your life? Right. Mm-hmm. Is it going to make you the person that you want to be in the world? Right. And when you can bring things home in that way, it's going to break even for a second that facade. And while that may not feel like progress, many cracks in the dam is eventually going to give way to the flow of divinity that will bring that person and the world everything that we need to have a different flow.
No, I like that. And yes, you read that quite well in regards to where I was trying to get as is that, you know, for everybody out there that does not want to be divisive and they want to be able to talk, and that's a great way to do it. And I love it. And it's very similar to some of the things that I do, where it's just a matter of be calm and listen. But I like the part about having them turn inward. What is it that you want? So I think that's great. In fact, and it made me think of another quote. And this one is by Wayne Dyer, which he said, you know, how people treat you is their karma. How you react to it is yours. So that is what I was thinking as you were saying that. Is that something, I assume that's something that you agree with? And yeah. what would you add to that?
Well, and that, I think when I say, you know, don't be mad. Don't be mad that people are the way they are, because they are. Like it's fascinating. I have a show coming up on LA Talk Radio as well, starting in September, and I've been advertising it. And just because I use the word spiritual empath after my name, because that's how I describe myself, people write nasty things. They tell me I'm going to hell. Like I've just been like amazed at people's responses, but I'm not going to respond to that because there's nothing I can say that will change them. And I don't, that's not my job.
Okay. And then let me add to that. And I'm guessing, because you and I haven't talked about this, but would it be safe to say that there's at least 10 times as many comments about how happy they are that you're coming on and looking forward to it?
Yes.
Thank you. Which now goes to the thing of what is it that we focus on? And I love it. What you're saying is, I'm not going to focus on these things. I'm going to focus on the fact that there are so many people that are looking forward to this.
Right. And that I can't be mad at them. I read the comments and then I delete them. That's what I do because they can't, they are making assumptions that I'm not going to participate with because it doesn't serve me and it doesn't serve them. Mm-hmm. And so you can't carry that for them.
Yeah. And I want to touch on what you brought up about having your own show, which I was happy to find out. So Tracy's show is going to be on every other Thursday at noon, and it's going to start September 2nd. So for those of you that are choosing to listen to this through LA Talk Radio or watching it on the LA Talk Radio Facebook page, you can go right there. Now, are there any other platforms that you will be on?
Well, my show is called Chatcast, and I've been doing it via Facebook Live for the last year. It won a couple of Coalition of Visionary Resources Visionary Awards this year, which is why I decided to take it to a wider platform. And then with LA Talk Radio, it will go on all of the other platforms as well.
Great.
And it's called Chatcast, and basically we're going to talk about the things that people are uncomfortable talking about. We talk about boundaries. We talk about sex and consent. We talk about racism. We talk about systemic racism, cultural trauma, spiritual trauma, religion, politics, but not like it's not a political conversation. It's that the spiritual reasons we are all here doing what we're doing in this way right now, and how can we all get through it? It is inevitable that we are every minute of every day, we are beginning to unify in ways that are unseen. Yep. That's like on a spiritual level, that's what I know. Now, what that looks like is a big old shit show.
Well, yes. And I kind of refer to that as my pendulum theory is that, and when people are saying, oh, my God, it's getting so bad and so on. And I go, well, for those of us that have been on the earth for a period of time,
right.
In 1968, I can remember people saying that, this is such an incredible shit show. How are we ever going to get back out of this?
Right.
And guess what? We did fine. We may have gotten to a point, but at some point in time, it starts to swing back and hopefully we get to a more a normal and spiritually sound place to be, and in a place that's operating more out of love and compassion. So,
right, and inclusivity.
Exactly.
Who you are doesn't make me who I am.
Yes, as I expected, we weren't going to have enough time, so we're running. Running close. I've got a couple of questions that have come in. I'm going to throw these out there and see if we can get some rather quick answers. If not, I'm going to post the questions or you can post the questions as well. And then people can go to your site and read the answers. But this first one says, I'm very curious about a definition of karma that I read recently. It stated that most karma refers to that which leads to worldly happiness. But there is also another kind of supremely good karma that can end suffering forever. Those who are liberated by this karma achieve nirvana and do not generate any more karma. This is a bit confusing. What do you believe this supreme good karma actually is, and is it achievable? And that's from Nan in Texas.
Okay, Nan in Texas. Karma is, it's a Sanskrit word that means the reaction to an action taken. So there is no emotion. There is no good. There is no bad in karma. Karma is only an action taken and the reaction that happens because of it. So what that means, when they talk about nirvana, for me, I lived an entire life. My first half of my life was grieving all of the patterns that I had that weren't working for me. I grieved them out. I made choices. I made changes. I did all of this stuff. And there literally was a moment in time where I felt my karma lift off of me. That pattern that had kept me in that place, it lifted. I was much happier. You know, so there does, when we overcome a pattern, when we really do all the things that we can to shift it, the energy eventually dissipates and we're able to move forward in a new way and we create a new pattern. Now, there are patterns that create strife and there are patterns that create joy. So that's what that's talking about. So you have the ability to do whatever. If you feel like you came into the life burdened, then you have some patterns that you must work through, but they eventually will lift and you'll be able to create new ones that create joy for you.
All right. Now what I'm going to do, I'm going to read this next question. Yes. And if you can just give your website when we're done, can you answer it on your website? And those people can go to your site to get the answer. Is that fair?
Sure.
All right. So this one reads, your book looks fascinating. Can you explain the term spiritual patterning that you refer to? Does this have anything to do with soul groups that come back together to keep trying to get it right? I feel like I have this with a dear friend over a 20-year period. We have been through so much together, mostly me helping her clean up her life and relationships. I get these flashed and deep feelings that we have been in this situation many times over many lifetimes, but that the roles many have been reversed and she was doing the cleanup in other situations. Could these feelings actually be valid? And that's from Sheila in Minnesota. So okay. Can you give us the website? And for anybody, so Sheila, that's where you can go to get the answer. And for anybody else that's thinking about that going, wow, I want to know that too.
Yes.
Please go to Tracy's website.
So my website is tracydunblazer.com, but where I'm going to answer that question, because yes, I talk about that in the book. It's about soulmates and soul groups and understanding how that works. Living Radical Acceptance. Living Radical Acceptance on Facebook.
Okay.
It's a group that I have. It's a program that I do, and I will answer it on that page for you.
Perfect. So again, that's Living Radical Acceptance on Tracy's Facebook page. Tracy, thank you so much. This is so enlightening and I appreciate it very much. I appreciate what you're doing and please keep it up.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. And for everybody out there, please join us next Monday when we are joined by Elke Schultz to discuss her new book, Anxiety Warrior, Practical Tools to Get Through Every Day. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network or subscribe to the show through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, BeatChu, and this one, YugiTube. I'm going to spell it. It's U as in Union, G as in George, E as in Edward, Tube, T-U-B-E. Check that one out. And many other popular podcasts. Many other platforms that carry podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest shows. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain. And fast. Honestly, You may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain, no mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.